Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. My guest is Sandy Chung, Executive Director of ACLU Oregon. ACLU has been hard at work to protect immigrant and refugee rights. We'll talk about ACLU's lawsuits and legislation here in Oregon, as well as ACLU's work on the national scene. Welcome, Sandy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Karen.
I thought we'd start on the national scene with the Department of Homeland Security funding bill. Currently, there are some legislators, Democrats and Republicans in D.C. who are refusing to fund the annual budget, which funds ICE, because of their concerns about ICE activities.
Karen, I think a lot of our lawmakers, including those in our federal Senate and Congress, are recognizing, like Americans across the country, that ICE is becoming one of the biggest threats to public safety and to the well-being of our communities, including our economic well-being across America. And here, when I say ICE, I am referring to the federal agencies that engage in the targeting, harassment, kidnapping, and detentions, the imprisonment of immigrants and refugees. And so it is ICE, which is an agency within the Department of Homeland Security. But another agency that oftentimes engages in these actions is Customs and Border Patrol, also known as CBP, which is also part of DHS. And so, you know, DHS is an agency that has existed for about 2 decades, so not very long. And basically last year, in 2025, they received $180 billion for their activities. And of this amount, ICE received $75 billion. About $45 billion to build more of these detention centers, which accurately should be called concentration camps, and then $30 billion for their operations. And then Customs and Border Patrol received about $65 billion. Now, this is compared to a total DHS budget the prior year that was about $60 or $65 billion. And so basically, last year, Congress gave ICE and Customs and Border Patrol more than twice what DHS overall annual budget was.
And ACLU National is working on monitoring the purchasing of warehouses across the country. And we all know about the alligator Alcatraz in Florida's Everglades, and where they're keeping immigrants currently. Amnesty International just did a report about the horrendous conditions. So talk about this work of ACLU National and the purchasing of the warehouses.
I think to provide context to that, I want to provide you with some numbers in this area. So when Trump took office about a year ago, there were about 40,000 people across the country in these ICE detention centers. And I'm going to sometimes use the word detention centers, but I do think based on their conditions, they are really modern day versions of American concentration camps. As of mid-January of 2026 this year, so about a year into Trump's presidency, there were 73,000 people in detention centers. So not quite twice the number in the past year, but getting there. And the conditions in these detention centers are just horrific and inhumane. They're overcrowded. So we are hearing about 35 to 40 people sharing one toilet. People sleeping on concrete floors, head to toe. We're also hearing reports that people in these centers are sometimes given only one cup of rice and a glass of water per day, that they're getting rotten food, that there's substandard medical care, if any medical care at all. There are also people getting sick, including from things like TB that are spreading within these centers. And there have also been people who have died in these centers, as well as people who have died after getting out of these centers. And we know based on just the data that DHS has that 2025 was the deadliest year for ICE on record. 32 people died in detention centers. And it's looking like 2026 is going to be far worse. In January 2026 alone, 8 people died in ICE detention centers. So these detention centers are horrible. And what ICE is planning to do is because they want to basically target and imprison more people, more of our immigrant and refugee neighbors, they're planning to now purchase warehouses across the country to turn into these concentration camps. And they basically, their plans indicate that they want to purchase 24 warehouses across the country. They obviously have a lot of funding for this because they received $45 billion last year from Congress to use for facilities like this. And they've already purchased warehouses in states like Georgia, Texas, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and other states. But what I want to note for the public is we are also seeing pushback against these warehouses across the country because everyday people and local elected leaders are speaking out and fighting back. And so far, we know that everyday folks have blocked at least 12 purchases in areas across the country. And so it's really important for people to pay attention to what's happening in their communities. We know that it wasn't a warehouse, but the city of Newport on the Oregon coast, there was some indication that DHS wanted to convert a Coast Guard facility into some type of ICE processing or detention center. And both elected leaders and the everyday people there said no, they organized. And, you know, so far, none of those plans have been finalized. But it's really important for everyday people in communities to pay attention. And if they learn of these plans, to organize and stop them from happening. You know, especially last week, there were a lot of days of remembrances related to Japanese Americans who were interned. You know, more than 120,000 Japanese Americans were interned, imprisoned in concentration camps during World War II, American concentration camps. And, you know, when you look at the history of those concentration camps and what's currently happening, it really does not appear different. And in fact, we have a lot of Japanese American survivors of the concentration camps, as well as their family members who are saying this is a tragic repeat of history that we have to stop.
And Sandy, we should also mention that members of Congress who are legally authorized to visit these warehouses, these detention facilities, are being denied entry.
That's correct. Not only have they been denied entry, but last year there were also lawmakers, Congressional House of Representatives in New Jersey who were arrested for trying to enter these detention centers, even though they have the authority to be able to do so. I think that being said, a lot of our representatives here in Oregon and senators, they have been very active in making sure that our immigrant and refugee neighbors, that their rights are protected, that they are trying to assess the conditions at the detention centers and processing facilities as much as possible. And so I know our congressional members, you know, have been able to obtain access at times, but it isn't consistent and lawful in the way that it should be.
And one of the lawsuits that ACLU National is involved with now is the birthright citizenship lawsuit, where Trump is now targeting babies.
Yes. So the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution says this, that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction of the United States are citizens of the United States and of the state where they reside. And this principle that people born or naturalized in the U.S., that we are citizens of the United States, this was confirmed by a Supreme Court case in 1898. So more than 120 years ago. And this was the U.S. versus Wong Kim Ark case. And this case clarified that children born in the U.S. to immigrant parents, even if those immigrant parents did not have citizenship or other status, that those babies were still U.S. citizens, having been born on this soil. Well, on his first day in office of his second term, President Trump basically immediately attacked this basic constitutional right with an executive order that aims to end birthright citizenship for the children of undocumented immigrants. And this case is currently before the U.S. Supreme Court. Oral arguments will be heard on April 1st. And this oral argument for the ACLU and the plaintiffs who are arguing that this is a basic constitutional right that must be upheld, the arguments will be done by ACLU's National Legal Director, Cecilia Wang, who is of Chinese American heritage. And this is a case that is important for all folks in the United States. It is a basic constitutional right for all of us. And for Asian Americans like myself and Celia, it hits especially close to home because, you know, the reason why Wong Kim Ark, the plaintiff in this 1898 case, the reason his parents were not documented per se is because for many decades until very recently, Asian Americans in the United States were not allowed to become citizens, right? So even with Japanese internment, there are a lot of parents in those camps who were not citizens, not because they didn't want to be, but by law, they were not allowed to be. And so this is, I think, also for Asian Americans, a case that really hits very close to home in terms of the history of racism in this country. And it is a really important legal case for all Americans.
And you can go to the website, ACLU.org, add your name, because ACLU National will take that list of names to the Supreme Court with them for this lawsuit on April 1st.
Yes, that's correct. It's really important for everyday people to speak up and tell all of our government bodies, including the Supreme Court, that they must affirm our basic constitutional rights.
And Sandy, there was another recent decision by the Fifth Circuit Court that impacted immigrant rights.
So on February 6th, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit held that people who've entered the United States without authorization from Customs and Border Patrol, so what some people would refer to as people who are undocumented in the U.S., that these folks are subject to mandatory detention in these ICE concentration camps without the opportunity to appear before an immigration judge and be released subject to a bond. So what does this mean? An immigration bond hearing is a legal process where an immigration judge determines if a detained individual can be released from ICE detention while they're awaiting their full legal removal process. And in this process, this bond process, the immigration judge assesses if the person is a flight risk or a danger to the community. And if the judge's assessment is that these factors aren't applicable, then the judge usually sets a bond, like around $1,500, and basically says to the person, you're released, but you have to come back for court, you know, ICE appointments and court hearings. So this has been the usual process. And this is a process that's been supported by hundreds of federal courts across the country. Well, on February 6th, the Fifth Circuit basically held that undocumented people don't have this opportunity with an immigration court. And this is a radical and completely unfair departure from how immigration law has been interpreted by most federal courts across the country. So why is this important? Well, the Fifth Circuit actually covers Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. And all of the ICE detention centers are pretty horrible, but especially the detention centers in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, these are some of the worst, most inhumane detention centers across the country. So what Fifth Circuit has basically done is said anyone who's detained in these detention centers, and increasingly even people who are detained in Oregon, are not necessarily sent to Tacoma. They're sent to these detention centers in Texas, Louisiana, or Mississippi, that basically if they're held there, that they won't have this legal recourse to immigration court to try to get release pending their legal process. And this makes the Trump administration's mass deportation efforts much easier because the conditions at these concentration camps are so horrific that even if individuals actually may have good, lawful arguments for why they should have relief from deportation from a court, they may choose to self-deport because it's just too harmful to stay in these centers. So they won't exercise their legal rights, not because they can't, but because, you know, to be honest, they want to survive and, you know, not be subject to these conditions where some people are also dying because of them.
Do you see this trend happening across the country?
Well, you know, what we know is hundreds of federal courts across the country have for many years have said otherwise, that undocumented folks in the United States have access to these bond hearings. We know that there are a couple of appeals happening in different parts of the country. So we will see what happens. And we will see what happens if this type of case is taken to the Supreme Court. But for now, people should rest assured that especially if you are detained outside the Fifth Circuit, so if you are in, say, the Tacoma Detention Center, you are not subject to the Fifth Circuit's ruling. So it's really important for all people who are detained by ICE to be connected to an attorney who can represent them. And here, I want to note one thing. Oregon is a really special state in terms of the immigrant and refugee rights systems that we've built here. And so for many decades, we've been a sanctuary state. And that basically means that state and local resources can't be used to aid ICE immigration enforcement. And these resources include sheriff and police, staff and time, as well as our jails. Another system we have is called universal legal representation. And this is basically a law that provides for state funding for immigration attorneys. So Oregonians who are going through deportation proceedings can have an attorney represent them, even if they can't afford one. And so when we have these rapid response systems in Oregon, when people let us that people have been detained by calling organizations like PERC, what our rapid response system does is make sure that those people are connected to the lawyers so that they can be represented, even if they can't be afforded one. Because legal representation right now is very critical to reducing harm for immigrants who are targeted by ICE.
So, Sandy, you're mentioning existing laws. Let's talk about some hopefully new laws that are happening right now in the Oregon legislative session. ACLU Oregon has been involved with the Immigrant Justice Package. Can you talk about that?
So of the immigrant justice package, we are leading a really important bill. It is House Bill 4138, which is also called the Law Enforcement Accountability and Visibility Act, or LEVA. And we also say it's also kind of, we colloquially say, leave us alone, federal government. But let me explain LEVA. So we all know that our communities, not just in Oregon, but Minnesota and across the country, have been experiencing this very dangerous public situation, safety situation, of masked, unidentifiable people claiming to be ICE agents who are creating a lot of fear and confusion and just harm. And we believe that if a government operative or agent or law enforcement officer has the power to stop you, to question you, to arrest you, to even use physical violence against you, at the very least, we deserve to know exactly who you are and who you work for. And so this is what House Bill 4138, LEVA, does. It strengthens visibility and accountability of all law enforcement in Oregon, including law enforcement at the local, state, and federal levels. It requires all law enforcement officers operating Oregon to visibly identify themselves, the agency they represent, and to not wear a mask. It also builds a firewall between state and local public employees and the federal government to protect their civil liberties and civil rights. And it does this by stopping public employees in Oregon from intentionally or knowingly cooperating with federal or other out-of-state attacks on free speech, on lawfully protected status, or with unconstitutional searches or seizures. So currently, this bill has passed the Oregon State House. It is currently in the Senate. I have to tell you, we are in short session, which means this is a very quick legislative process. And I'm not sure if this bill is going to pass, because there have been shenanigans by law enforcement, and there have been enough lawmakers to allow those shenanigans. So it's not clear if there will be enough time to pass this. Our policy team is working furiously on it, and so we will try our best. But one thing I do encourage people to do at the end of our interview, I will give people our website. Please sign up, because we will keep you informed if this bill isn't passed and explain to you exactly why that happened, because we need to keep our elected officials responsible if they're not able to pass these types of bills that are really necessary now to protect Oregonians.
There was another bill where companies, Flock and the ALPRs, there were some shenanigans there too. Talk about that, Sandy.
Yes. So let me first talk about what ALPR systems are. So ALPR stands for automatic license plate readers. And basically, they're camera systems that use AI to capture license plate numbers along with time and location data. So like if a car is driving past, the video camera will capture the license plate number and when that car was passing by and the location. And then all this data is basically sent to a storage location owned by these companies. So one of these companies that a lot of people have heard about is Flock. They operate more than 100,000 cameras across the country who automatically capture license plate information along with time and location, and then store this data. So what this means is that companies like Flock, they're actually creating really detailed records that they're storing about all of us, where we live, where we work, where we're going to worship, where we're visiting friends, and even where we're going to organize or to go to a protest, right? So this is pretty dangerous, because when we have a federal government that is actively surveilling people, including immigrants and refugees, to find out where they are and then try to imprison them, they're definitely accessing these systems. And in fact, we know from concrete situations that ICE has accessed this license plate data from companies like Flock. We also know that law enforcement agencies in states like Texas have actually accessed this data from more than 70,000 cameras across the country, including in blue states like Illinois and Washington, as part of their abortion investigations. And so very dangerous. And right now, what state lawmakers are doing is they're saying, you know, obviously we need some controls around this type of technology. And so they are working on Senate Bill 1516. This is the problem, though. We've been working really closely with lawmakers, including provide expertise from ACLU National's privacy experts about the key things that are needed to create protections against this type of technology. And so far, it's not clear that our lawmakers are fully hearing us. But I want to be very clear about the three core elements we think must be part of these legal protections. First, Oregon needs to make sure that these types of technologies limit the data retention period of time. The longer the data gathered by these companies is stored, the greater the risk that the government, like ICE, can try to get it, including through a warrant or a subpoena, right? Because if a company has this data, ICE can say, you know what, I have this court warrant, I want this data. And lawmakers have said, isn't that kind of a hypothetical? I don't think it is, because actually earlier this month, the New York Times reported that ICE had actually sent to Google, to Meta and other companies, hundreds of subpoenas for information on social media accounts that track or comment on immigration, right? So they actually want social media information from these companies and the identities of people who are doing these social media accounts. So is it that far-fetched to say at some point, you know, we can also have ICE asking for license plate data, location data? It isn't at all. And so the ACLU of Oregon's position is that Oregon should cap the data retention period at 21 days, like states like Maine and Virginia, instead of allowing a longer data retention period like the red states. Second, we believe that this type of technology needs to have real end-to-end encryption. And what is end-to-end encryption? It is basically things built into the technology to ensure that no one, including red states, the federal government, or other bad actors, can hack into the system to steal the data. And third, Oregon needs to make sure that these technologies and the data gathered are used by law enforcement for actual serious crimes, right? Let's make sure that the use of this technology and this data is limited to serious crimes, not minor offenses. Because what we know is our criminal system has continued to prosecute in a disproportionate way communities of color and poor, low-income Oregonians with minor offenses that actually don't create public safety. So we don't want these types of government surveillance systems to be continuing to disproportionately harm and impact our Black, Brown, and low-income communities. So these are the three things that we are asking for from state lawmakers. Karen, to be honest, I don't know that they will listen. We're trying our best, but we encourage people to sign up for our email list so they can receive information from us about what's going on. The other thing I want to note too, with legislative session, just because it wasn't accomplished during one session doesn't mean we can't go back. And so we will always keep fighting in all of our legislative sessions for the protections that Oregonians need.
Talk about one fight that you just won, Dickinson, our Portland chicken versus Trump.
Well, I think a lot of people know that ICE and other federal agents have engaged in pretty brutal ways to peaceful protesters. You know, we've seen this in Minnesota, but we've also experienced this in Oregon too. And in fact, on January 31st, there's actually a really, really big crowd of peaceful protesters, including many protesters who were families with their kids and dogs, who had gathered to protest and march by the Portland ICE facility. And this was actually organized by a lot of our amazing labor partners across Oregon. Well, even with this very peaceful protest that consisted of many families and pets, ICE officers actually released tear gas, completely inappropriate to the situation because there was just no justification for that use of violence. What our Portland Chicken v. Trump lawsuit is trying to do is basically get an order from the court that says that ICE and the Department of Homeland Security and federal agents cannot use unlawful types of violence, including tear gas and projectile munitions, also sometimes known as impact munitions, against peaceful protesters and journalists at the Portland ICE facility. We did file this in November of 2025, but on February 3rd, we were actually able to get an order from the federal district court that basically temporarily restrained federal agents from using chemical and projectile weapons, unless the specific person that the feds were targeting that weapon with posed an imminent threat of physical harm to a law enforcement officer or to another person. So just really, you know, the principle that federal agents are going to use violence, they should use it towards the particular person who's actually causing harm and violence that's really significant. So this TRO was granted. TROs usually last for 14 days. And so what the court did is they did the TRO originally for 14 days. They extended it for another 14 days. Our lawyers are actually going back to court next week to ask for a preliminary injunction, which is a court order basically saying that DHS can't use unlawful violence for the entire length of this court case. And our goal at the end of the court case is to have an order from the court prohibiting unlawful violence by federal agents going forward as long as necessary.
ACLU Oregon works closely with Innovation Law Lab, and they have had success with some lawsuits. Can you mention some of those?
So Innovation Law Lab is a very important partner for us. I encourage folks to learn about their programs. One of the things that they do is they have immigration attorneys who do represent people who've been detained by ICE and put into deportation proceedings. Our partners at Innovation Law Lab, there are times when someone is detained and they're taken to the Portland ICE facility by ICE. The lawyers will go down there to make sure that people are represented and to explore the possibility of getting them released before they're sent to a detention center like Tacoma or in other states. Some of the other work that Innovation Law Lab does are class action lawsuits to really try to prevent further harm and mitigate the harm that is happening. And so I want to talk about one of these cases. In fall of 2025, Innovation Law Lab filed a lawsuit on behalf of two individuals for what they consider to be unlawful arrest by ICE. And basically what these individuals said was that they were arrested without reasonable suspicion, without ICE going through the legally required warrant process to determine if there was a lawful basis to arrest them. And what happened during this lawsuit is, as part of the lawsuit, Innovation Law Lab was able to gather evidence that starting in October 2025, the Department of Homeland Security actually started an operation in Oregon that they referred to as Operation Black Rose. This operation involved ICE engaging in intrusive surveillance technology of people they perceived to be immigrants. And this technology was things like facial recognition technology, drones, and massive amounts of data scraping from social media and other sites to target people. This operation also involved really aggressive, often violent, warrantless arrests of people perceived to be immigrants under a policy that was described as arrest first, justify later. And I want to talk about what warrants do. What warrants do is they protect people from unlawful, abusive arrests by federal agents. When government agents are required to get a warrant before arresting someone, this checks the ability of individual government agents to abuse their powers because they actually need to do the work of gathering and setting out legitimate information about why they have reasonable suspicion that someone should be lawfully arrested. And then to get the warrant, they need that reasoning reviewed and approved by a supervising government official. This is for administrative warrants, or for the court for judicial warrants. Well, this is the thing. These agents were not doing this work. Instead, they were just going out arresting anyone just based on their whims. And that's not lawful. And so on February 4th, in this lawsuit filed by Innovation Law Lab, a federal court ordered ICE to stop carrying out their unlawful policy of making immigration arrests without warrants and without first considering whether someone is a flight risk. So basically, this court halted this unlawful policy of arrest first, justify later. And so this is a real significant win that helps protect Oregonians from unlawful ICE actions here in Oregon.
So many organizations here in Oregon doing some wonderful work on behalf of our immigrant community and refugees. So let's talk about what steps people can take.
Well, first, Karen, I really want to talk about PERC Oregon, which stands for the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition. And here, I need everyone to get their phones out while they're listening. PERC's number is 1-888-622-1510. Once again, 1-888-622-1510. I make sure that this number is saved in my phone on my favorites, because this is what people should use this number for. If you are in Oregon and you see ICE or other federal agents who may be engaging in potential ICE activity, please call PERC. If you do that, they will activate trained volunteers who can go out and actually check if it was real ICE activity and put all of the next required steps into motion. As well, if you are someone in Oregon and your loved one has been detained by ICE, even if it's not today but before, please call PERC and report it. PERC can connect people who've been detained to immigration attorneys. They can also connect the families of detained people to resources that the families may need. And so PERC is really the heart of Oregon's rapid response system to protect immigrant refugees who are being targeted by ICE. So please put their number on your phone and remember to contact them. And sometimes people will say, well, I'm not sure. You can contact them. And then if they figure out that it's not applicable, they can do that analysis. The other thing that PERC does is they do Migra Watch trainings, which are trainings basically to teach everyday people about how you can document ICE activity if you see it. And so if you go on their website, you can sign up for one of these trainings, and they do them both virtually or online. So I encourage people to sign up for these trainings. So pircoregon.org. The next resource, the ACLU of Oregon. The ACLU of Oregon website is aclu-or.org. We have a Know Your Rights section on our website. It has information about immigrants' rights, free speech rights and protest rights, trans rights, as the rights of students in schools. And so a great place to start if you need to know your rights in these areas or share them with your communities. Also, as I've stated before, I encourage people to go on our website and sign up for our email list so that you can receive our alerts. Because all of the work we do is very important, especially with our policy work. When our elected leaders are not representing us in the ways that we need them, we need to know about it to hold them accountable and to make sure that democracy works. And to be honest, as an everyday person, it's pretty hard to know about all the things being done by our lawmakers. And we will let you know the really important things to know, whether it's about immigrant and refugee rights, trans rights, protesters' rights, so that you can let our lawmakers know when you disagree with their actions or inactions. I also encourage people to go to our website and consider becoming a member. We have more than 52,000 people in Oregon who are members or donor supporters. This is more than 1.5% of the Oregon adult population. To be honest, amongst all of the ACLU state affiliates, we have the highest number of members per capita of any affiliate. So obviously, Oregonians deeply care about our democracy and constitutional rights. So please consider joining and becoming a member, because this is really a way that Oregonians make it possible for us to do the work of protecting democracy in our most vulnerable communities. And then last, I want to encourage people to sign up for emails from Oregon's pro-democracy coalition, which is called Protect Oregon. And you can do this at their website, which is www.protect-oregon.com. And so if you sign up, their emails will actually give you specific things that you can engage in every week and month.
Sandy, thank you for all the work of ACLU and your team at ACLU Oregon. Thank you for being here. All the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Karen.